Hello, welcome to Universal Soul Love. This is Detective David Love.
This is Dr. Lana Love.
Welcome to our show. We're very pleased to have our very special guest, Joseph McGonigal, on our show today. Joseph has 30 years of professional expertise in research and development in numerous multi-level technical systems of paranormal and social scientists. He's one of the world's most well-renowned remote viewers. He was with he was a psychic researcher and participant in the Stargate project with Army Intelligence and the Stanford Institute Research branch. And he's also written several books, including Mind Track, The Ultimate Time Machine, Perceptions of a Paranormal Subject, and of course the Stargate Chronicles.
So we're very, very excited to have Joseph here with so much expertise in so many different areas, but especially in the areas of consciousness, remote viewing, and the paranormal. Absolutely thrilled to have you here. And, of course, Joseph works at the Monroe Institute
with Nancy McGonigal, who's the executive director, who was on our show last year, and we had a great time with Nancy. And I know we're going to have a fantastic show today talking about consciousness and astral projection and all sorts of paranormal subjects and topics.
So, Joseph, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Wow, it's fantastic to have you. So, do you want to just tell our audience a little bit about your background and experiences in the supernatural and paranormal and remote viewing?
I've been psychic since I was four, but I never told anybody that, and I just sort of wound up being recruited into the U.S. Army's program when they put it together. We were supposed to do a three-year study and try to determine how good the Russians might be using psychics against us, and it worked so well it turned into an operational system, and it wound up lasting 20 years. I worked as a remote viewer for almost all of the agencies in America, and then gravitated into the research portion, and am still a researcher. I work with the Cognitive Sciences Lab of Palo Alto. And I have my own company called Intuitive Intelligence Applications, which has been incorporated in the state of Virginia now for well over 30 years. So I've done a lot of work aside from the government agencies. I've done quite a bit of work for local law enforcement, actually law enforcement around the world, and many different corporate heads have used my expertise.
Joseph, could you tell our audience what remote viewing is?
Remote viewing is someone's ability to produce accurate information on a place, an object, an event, or someone's actions totally out of the blue. In other words, they have to be guaranteed to be totally blind to the target. All of our targets are done double blind. The only way you can get information, in fact, is psychically. There's no way you can infer it or imply it from anyone that you might be working with. If there's anybody in the room with the psychic at the time they're giving information, they cannot know what the target is either. That's the only way to guarantee that the psychic's absolutely blind to the target.
And that's basically the scientific method.
Yes, absolutely.
It's very stringent.
So, basically,
it's a very stringent.
On the very scientific test.
Could you repeat that, please?
Stringent scientific protocol.
Yeah, it's very difficult. It's hard to learn. And while everyone in the world is psychic, not many can operate at the level that's required to do the remote viewing.
And So how does that differ from clairvoyance? I've been a private detective for 2 years, and I've worked with a number of three-letter agencies on some of my cases, and I know that intuition and awareness is one of my best tools in just problem-solving. I can relate to what you're saying. But I think clairvoyance is slightly different, isn't it, when it comes to remote viewing?
Well, it's not really. The difference is that it's more spontaneous. It's like an intuitive or gut feeling about something that you might be working on that opens a door that you otherwise wouldn't be, you know, a direction you might not be looking in. Remote viewing is just simply trying to take that skill and be able to produce information on demand. There are a lot of people, specifically in law enforcement, regardless of the kind of law enforcement, who have innate abilities themselves, and they would call it their gut response, or you know, the hair stood up on the back of their neck and told them something they wouldn't have normally have guessed at, you know, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more of a spontaneous act.
Mm. It's a feeling, a gut feeling that I've often gotten when trying to just discern information or try to figure out whether information is valid or whether, you know, particularly when people are reporting information to me, whether or not it's valid. And even a sense of when there's a legitimate threat, or just reading a room and reading the people in the room. And you know, you learn to develop that very quickly when you're interviewing witnesses and suspects and whatnot.
Exactly.
Within 30 seconds, and even somebody doesn't even necessarily need to speak. They only need to approach you, and you can almost develop a history on them to a certain degree.
Exactly.
It's interesting, David, what you're talking about is reading a room when you're in the room.
Or reading a person.
With a remote viewing, you're actually seeing something far away. Now, what's that like, Joseph?
Well, actually, it's not exactly seeing something. The psychic usually gets information in sort of an extraneous way. They may start mixing their senses. Like they'll say something like, "This smells like anger," or "This tastes like metal." They'll mix their six senses up. It's called synesthesia, and usually when you get that kind of a statement from someone, the information they're providing is usually more accurate than not. They don't actually know what they're interpreting. But it's kind of like everyone's been in a situation where they've gone to a party where they don't know anyone, and they've walked in the door, and they just sort of automatically know that the person standing by the punch bowl is somebody they're going to get along with really well, and someone sitting over in the corner is someone they don't want to be near. They might be, you know, picking up on pheromones or something. Who knows? But you just sort of intuitively know that kind of information.
I took a law enforcement interview and interrogation course many years ago that had to do with body language and reading nonverbal communication, which I think is a part of intuition. And I learned that, you can correct me on this, but I believe it's that we're always receiving information from outside of us. And I believe 70% of it is nonverbal.
That's exactly correct. In fact, you hit the percentile right on the button. It's approximately 70% of the information that we get or garner from other people is totally nonverbal. It's never spoken. It's just delivered through all different kinds of body movements or eye inclinations, just all kinds of different ways. And it's the reason why really good interrogators usually don't do anything except talk. And within a few very, very small amount of time, are able to identify the tells of the person they're interrogating, and can pretty much ferret out almost any form of information.
people have often asked me, what's your best interviewing technique rather than interrogation? And I would say, I just let the witness or the person talk. And they always say enough, and there's enough emotional content in what they're saying and enough just content for me to really get a good sense of what happened based on, you know, just letting someone talk and listening, empathic listening or active listening.
Exactly.
And using my higher senses for that.
So I'm curious because we're talking about
two different things.
No, we're talking about being able to get information about something which involves the emotions as well. Yet with the remote viewing, my understanding was that, you know, you would be viewing perhaps Soviet installations, you know, miles and miles and miles and miles away. Is there any emotional content that would have been involved in military remote viewing?
There can be. Usually, the way it worked in our office where we had the project, the remote viewer and a monitor would be given a task. And the task would be actually written down on a card or something and placed inside a double wrapped opaque envelope. And they would carry that into the session with them. The session, of course, was either taped or filmed or both. And they would interact together, both the monitor and the remote viewer, devising what kind of information they could dig out with regard to what was in the envelopes. And the monitor and remote viewer, of course, were completely blind to whatever was in the envelopes. A good example of that was a very large building in the north Arctic regions of Russia. It was a summer port. In other words, it was a harbor that was normally frozen in the winter. And they had a giant building there that was about 400 meters from the sea, and they were building something in it. And this went on for 2 years, and the National Security Council had a great interest in what was going on inside that building, but couldn't get anyone close to it because it was so well guarded. And that particular target was photographed, and they took a square inch of roofing tiles out of the picture, you know, cut it from a picture and put it in a double wrapped opaque envelope, and basically said, tell us what's going on inside the structure identified within the envelope. What I produced over about a month's period of time was a number of drawings of a very large submarine, that I said was built a certain way and had certain capabilities. It was extremely large. And they looked at the report and thought that it was more fascination than or fantasy than anything else. And I told them when it would be launched. And they looked 112 days later, and lo and behold, the new Typhoon-class submarine was sitting at the harbor.
My goodness, it's absolutely amazing.
You've had an amazing, absolutely amazing career. I mean, you are a true a military intelligence agent, a psychic spy. I mean, your career has just blows me away.
Yeah, I believe you're the number one viewer in the remote viewer in the world, aren't you?
A lot of people claim that. I've met my Russian counterparts, and they have some pretty good remote viewers. And we, of course, had some very good remote viewers. And I don't think that there's ever been a contest of any kind to decide who was better.
I don't think we
care, really.
I know we asked your wife, Nancy, whether your amazing talent has ever been put to use if the keys are lost or anything else is lost in the house.
No, I that's, you know, it's funny you bring up keys. I live by a certain philosophy, which is if something's missing, it's usually missing for a reason. So if I can't find my keys in the morning, I'll go get another cup of coffee until they turn up. I know there's an accident out there happening somewhere, and I'm just not going to be involved in it.
So what you're saying is that what happens to us here and now is intimately connected with other happenings in the world?
Oh, yeah. My sense of it is that, I'll rephrase it this way. I believe very much the same way Einstein believed when it came to, talking about physics, talking about the reality of physics. And I'm a firm believer that we live pretty much in an illusionary fashion. What our eyes are actually seeing certainly aren't the pictures that we see. When we look around a room that we might be standing in, those are not pictures that we're seeing. Those are constructs that our brain makes based on what kind of photons are hitting the rods and the cones. So I think that it's a miraculous thing, just being able to see. We don't know how or why we create the world we live in, but that is a creation, and it's a shared creation by everyone, I think.
That's something that Lana and I are very interested in, the nature of reality and consciousness studies, and we're going to just go to a quick music break in a minute, and I'd like to, maybe we can come back and talk more about the nature of reality and metaphysics. We're really excited about that. We've had author Bruce Lipton on our show recently, and actually next week we have Dr. Rick Strassman, who wrote the DMT molecule, spirit molecule. So this is interesting, and this is a fantastic subject to bring up on Universal Soul Love. So let's just go to a quick music break, and we'll come back in a few minutes and we will talk about the nature of reality. Thank you, Joseph. Would you like to give us your website or any contact information before we go to break?
It's www.mceagle, MCEAGLE, it's .com. I never look up my own website, so I'm sorry. It's wmceagle.com.
Okay, fantastic. No worries. I do the same thing all the time. It's the nature of it. Thank you, Joseph. Okay, let's go to break.
Sure.
Hello, everyone. This is Margot Mattis with the Career Cards, talking to the Universal Soul Love audience today on March 23rd, 2016. Well, as most of the world knows, we woke up to news of disturbing violence in Brussels this morning. And all of our prayers and our hearts go out to all the people there in Brussels who are dealing with the aftermath. We pray for the souls of those that have been lost in this devastating tragedy. And we hold a light of love and compassion for all the families and the countries that are affected by this loss. And so as I come to the career cards tonight, I asked the question, of course, you know, what do you want us to know? And what came up tonight was the helper card for the career cards, the fear of failure card, which is so apropos for this tragedy, and then the trial and error card. So the career cards are really talking to us today about what do we do in the face of tragedies? How can we affect change and healing across the globe in something that seems so monumental and out of our control? And what the helper card tells us is through us, the universe provides love, help, and guidance whenever and wherever it is needed. So know that whoever you are, wherever you are, whatever you can do today to spread love, healing, compassion, wholeness, and centeredness in the midst of this, instead of fear, chaos, hatred, and more violence, obviously, is really, really important. So the second card in the spread today is the Fear of Failure card. And the Fear of Failure card, of course, says, who am I? I can't do anything to stop these tragedies. I can't make anything better. But the reality is that you can. Energetically, we are enormous. Energetically, we are unlimited. Energetically, we can and do affect events and people and the world that we live in, and even beyond this world, this physical world. So at this time, I really want to encourage you just to take a moment after this radio broadcast or after the podcast that you're listening to and really pray for an end to violence in the world, and really do that prayer where you bring the sun into your heart and you release that love out into the world. So understand that the last card in our spread today for this week is the trial and error card. And that is, there are no mistakes. That means keep trying. So try to affect change in one way. Try it in another. Even if you're just kinder to your neighbor today and every day after as a result of this. If this spurs you to become an advocate or to work in politics or to work in human rights or to work against terrorism in all of its forms, including prejudice and racism, then please do that, because this card is a card of urging you to action and urging you to make progress in whatever way you can. So with that, the career cards and I send you off with great love and compassion and healing this day. If you want to find us, you can find us at www.thecareercards.com. or www.getrealanswers.com. And I send you with love and blessings. Good evening.
Hello, welcome back to Universal Soul Love. This is Detective David Love.
And this is Dr. Lana Love.
Welcome back to our show. Today we have our special guest, Joseph McGonigal, with us today.
Hello, Joseph.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Joseph, what the experience that you've had is absolutely fascinating. Of course, we're talking about remote viewing and other unusual experiences related to consciousness and the paranormal.
Astral projection, and I think now we're starting to talk about metaphysics and the nature of reality, which is one of my favorite topics. We're talking sort of about perception and how things my own philosophy is that everything happens within the mind, everything we experience is within the mind, and of course we often talk about the veil, so the things outside of us are a bit vague and ambiguous. And of course when you're remote viewing or you're having an out-of-body experience, or an OBI, as Robert Monroe called it with the Monroe Institute, things can look very different, and the things you see are very different with astral projection. There's many systems outside of this. We know this. Many people have reported this. I think the universe is very different from the way we understand it with our eyes. So maybe you could just add a little bit more about your experience with that, Joseph.
What I believe is pretty much in agreement with what the physicists are saying today. Most physics people are involved in physics understand that in terms of reality or things that exist, pretty much everything that has existed since the beginning of time, and everything that will exist until the end of time, if there is such a thing, all just exist simultaneously. In other words, it everything is, and we as a live human are traveling through what is and creating a sort of reality during our very finite span of time. We step from room to room. It's like stepping from photograph to photograph. Those rooms never disappear. They're always there, and we're always in them. So each time we make a decision, it sort of bifurcates our world, our reality, and we go from one reality into the next possible reality. So it also has a way of assuming a multitude of different worlds. So we're hopping around from one to the other just by our decision making. I believe it's true because it would be the only way of understanding spontaneous healing, for instance, would be to step from a room in which we have a disease into a room in which we no longer have the disease.
I suppose it's like scenes on a film reel where all the scenes are on the film, but you're only seeing one scene at a time.
Right.
Endless possibilities, endless alternate realities.
Okay, my question then is this, it's something I've been toying with for a little while. Some metaphysics or philosophers say that there are multiple realities, multiple parallel universes. Other experts, though, say that in fact there is no such thing as time and space, and that's actually just what you said, Robert, that everything exists simultaneously.
That's point of singularity, but both are true, I believe.
Oh, no. So what you're saying is that... what do you think, Robert? Do you think that there are multiple realities? Oh, sorry, Joseph. There are multiple realities? Just
yeah, actually there are. For instance, you couldn't actually make decisions, free will decisions, without the ability to change worlds. So there have to be multiple realities that we step in and out of by just our decision making. They're all pretty much similar to some degree. The amount of change that takes place is so tiny or so small, we don't notice that we're going from one world to the next. We are, by our beliefs and constructs, we are actually creating the world in which we live. So if someone
changes this much.
Yeah, if someone, it's the reason I think, as I said before, that I think there is a spontaneous possibility for spontaneous healing. There's certainly actions speak louder than words in this case. So things we do in one world may carry over to the next. It has to be that way in my own mind. I just don't see any other way it could work. And be in agreement.
Yeah, based on my experiences, that's how I see it as well.
The thing is, if everything exists simultaneously, if time doesn't really exist, then wouldn't it be more like there's one reality, but lots of different sections in it?
It's called a multiverse.
Okay.
Yeah,
one
it's a multiverse. And you have to remember that that we have beliefs and constructs that we can't empty from our mind, and because we believe something is a certain way, we have the opportunity of creating that as we go. Mm-hmm. And so we're always stepping into the reality that will actually prove what we believe.
Yeah, I believe that those of us that create with intention are called reality artists, creating the masterpiece of our lives, and others are simply casual creators who create by default. And so that becomes whatever it is you believe becomes your reality. And, of course, you know, a lot of this is all based on cause and effect.
You know, what's interesting.
The future.
You're right. And what's interesting is it's attestable. We have a paper that was done many years ago that was titled Intention, Attention, and Expectation for Outcome. And when we brought that concept into the lab and we applied it to our experimentation, what we got was an enormous jump in success ratios for our experiments. If everyone in the lab is coherent in an expectation for outcome, that's usually the outcome you get. If you have one person who isn't part of that belief construct, then you lose that certain percentile of reality, and the results aren't exactly perfect. So it's kind of like bringing all the salespeople together when you have a new shoe that you're going to sell as a shoe salesman, and you bring all your salespeople in and get them all on the same sheet of music, and you have a successful sales program. It operates the same way in the world of psychic functioning.
So what you're saying is that to create a certain reality, it's not just that you can do that yourself with your perceptions, but it's far stronger if the people around you share that same perception?
Exactly. If everyone has an expectation for peace in the world, well, there's a guarantee there'll be peace in the world. If one person is a doubter, then there probably won't be, at least not perfect peace. So it's the idea that the majority rules.
That's interesting that you'd say that, because we've certainly had quite a few well-known life coaches on our show, like Dr. John DeMartini and Lynn Rose, who would agree with you on that. And of course, you and I are investigators, and Lon is a medical doctor. So, and we've had Bruce Lipton on our show and a number of people who have come to the same conclusion that certainly we're all creating reality. We're all creating from within, and we're all outputters creating
exactly.
The outer reality from within. But as a group,
exactly right.
It's an even bigger experience. Yeah.
Fascinating. Fascinating to think how much you can influence your own reality. Something else I'm itching to ask you about is time travel, because I believe you wrote a book on it.
The ultimate time machine is more about what we're talking about. My belief is that we have history because we live multiple lives. A lot of people believe in reincarnation. A vast proportion of the world population does. I don't believe in reincarnation, but I believe in multiple incarnations, meaning that I would not have to live one life after the other. I just simply live all of the lives together at the same time, which creates sort of a fabric. That creates a fabric of past and future.
I think I can relate to that, actually. I am a past life regressionist, a hypnotist, but I actually can relate to what you're saying, where you say that we live all of these lives at once, because I'm very aware of my past lives, and I'm actually aware that my past lives still exist. They're not in the past, because there is no past and there is no future.
Exactly.
It's just very much always the now. So those past lives exist now, and the
That's
future
right.
lives probably exist now as well.
I think a lot of people get nervous when you start talking like this, because they find it tough to have the one life they're living, never mind a whole multitude of lives.
Yeah, I don't think past life regression is useful for too many people if they can't deal with the life they're already living. And quite frankly, I think that we resolve a lot of our past life issues in this life by trying to improve
That's right.
upon. So
I guess the idea is that it's more parallel lines rather than rather than past, present, and future. So,
right.
So Robert, have you been able to? Robert Monroe with the founder of the Monroe Institute.
Yeah, one of my favorite figures in history, whatever history means.
I'd love to introduce Robert.
Can we interview Robert Monroe at some point? That would be very exciting.
Oh, yeah, that would be cool.
Joseph, what I wanted to ask you is, have you been able to go into the different lines? Are you able to go from one life into another life?
I've actually been in situations where I believe I was crossing or stepping on the very same path that I had been in one of my other lives, and to the point that it was of advantage to me. In particular, my travels to the Far East have been very much like that. I just feel like I've been places and done things that would require my having been alive in that particular circumstance. And in some cases, I've made statements that were taken down by my escorts and in Japan, as an example. And they've gone and looked up the histories and were able to find errors in the history that that I was reporting. One case in particular had to do with a specific gate on a castle in Japan. It was known as the Suicide Gate. They had the title of the Suicide Gate, and they were advertised. The advertisement for it was, this is where they sent the people who offended the warlord, and they had to commit suicide there. And I said, no, that's not why it was called that. It was called that because it was suicide to defend that gate. It was the most difficult gate to defend on the castle, and everybody wanted to go and defend it so that they would gain appreciation from the warlord. And it turned out, after 6 months of researching the records, they were able to determine that that was actually correct. So I don't know how I would have known that other than psychically, I suppose.
These things are, this is a fascinating discussion for us. And of course, I don't know how you can ever really find evidence to validate anything like this. But then I spent so much time in criminal defense investigation, working in the court system, that I would challenge anyone to prove anything, any belief or fact beyond a reasonable doubt. That's a very high standard. And I don't think there's any piece of information, anything can be disputed. And I've watched lawyers do this successfully. They can literally prove to a jury that the beyond a reasonable doubt, with medical studies and scientific evidence, that the moon is made of green cheese. I'm sort of over all the evidence and proof. It's because everything is really a personal experience, and it's really a personal truth. And so it just has to be a certain amount of allowing of innocent beliefs and just acknowledgement that we cannot know the truth, the absolute sacred truth.
I would challenge truth. I would challenge anyone who thinks that there are finite truths to read a book called Forbidden Archaeology by Mr. Cremo and Thompson, and I think they'll have their eyes opened. It's a remarkable book. Talks about a lot of things that cannot exist in reality if the world is created and its history is as we believe it is. These things just couldn't be. Things found in coal, anthracite coal, for instance, the only way you could see them is to have the hard coal x-rayed, and yet these things exist inside the coal, and the coal mines are anywhere from 11 to 25 million years old. That's just remarkable stuff.
I've had a few very classic out-of-body experiences in the past, and I've seen beings that do not exist in the physical world, and I'm not sure what they are. And there was even one time when I had a credible witness. We were wide awake at night, and we both clearly saw what I now noted or believed to be a shadow person, and I didn't know what those were at the time. And I wrote that up as an article on the Internet. And I still don't know what a shadow person is or what to make of that. And so I try to be as objective as I can in reporting what I've seen without coming to any conclusions, because I really can't, about the nature of these things. But it's just enough for me to know that there's another world or existence outside of the one that we normally associate with and believe to be the only one, the physical reality or the material world. So...
Yes, the Army actually, the way I met Robert Monroe at the Monroe Institute was as a direct result of the Army paying for me to go there. They knew that Robert Monroe had written his books about out-of-body travel, and they also knew that since I had a near-death experience in 1970 that I was having spontaneous out-of-bodies. And so they actually had me work with Bob in his lab at the Monroe Institute for about a 14-month period, and I was tested to see whether or not I could actually prove being out of body by collecting information, very specific information on something. And I was able to actually do that. In fact, I was able to draw the object to such accuracy that they said that it would be possible to actually construct it and have it operate or work the same as the original target. So in those travels, those out-of-body travels, I'm occasionally bumping into entities, I will call them. I don't know what they are. I don't know where they're from in many cases. But they seem to have some interest in me, and that's enough, I think. very, very bizarre cases of with bumping into some of these entities and having conversations with them.
It is. I know, you know, the first more than 10 years ago, and maybe more than 15 years ago, when I first saw one of these things, it was a dark cloud. I started sensing it long before I actually saw it in my astral body or subtle body or whatever. And it actually terrified me. I mean, it was like the feeling of being in a horror movie. But then as time went on and I saw a few more of these things, it became, you know, I lost the fear, and I have, because I understand that these are just entities of whatever their nature is, and that they have a nature just like many people do. There are many types of people in the world, many types of animals, and so I've become okay with that. And at the time, I thought I was crazy, and I talked to a doctor, and they told me, well, these are hypnagogic images, and they're just very normal for people. Just waking up from sleep or just falling asleep. And that didn't really answer my question as to what it was I actually saw. They sort of gave me just a name for it. For this.
It's kind of like being patted. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like being patted on the head and told that you'll be okay.
Yeah,
is very condescending.
And we went. I belonged to a Rosicrucian order for many years, and there were there was an astrophysicist, there were lawyers, there was a police officer, there was a diplomat, there was all kinds of scientists, mathematicians that worked for the government, and you know they didn't want to come out in public. We would meet in the lodge because the first fear of being ridiculed or criticized or ostracized from their professional societies, and I've seen this in court, it's a great tactic to win cases. So yeah. I understood. And things have changed, certainly, you know, in the last 10 years or so. That's how that was back then, that we didn't talk. And I know, I understand that when you were working for Project Stargate for the Army Intelligence, that sort of went on. You were the other scientists or other Army personnel didn't really think highly of the psychic and the participants in the experiments.
Well, the way I word it, sometimes people say, well, how was it actually working for NSA or CIA or DIA or any of these you know, lettered agencies? And I said, well, it's kind of like going to work in a phone booth and having a knife fight in the dark. You just didn't know who was your friend and who was your enemy. But many of the jobs I did were very much appreciated. I saw I would have to say at least 30% of the things that we worked on, we turned out solving. And when you consider the fact that everything we worked on was dead on arrival, that other agencies had sometimes worked on the problems for 2 or 3 years and gotten nowhere, and we were able to solve the problems in a matter of hours, I would say that that speaks very highly of things working.
That's interesting because I understand that the remote viewing project was supposedly ceased because it was not effective. So that's actually completely wrong.
Yeah, well, you know, the guy who said that was Robert Gates, our ex-Secretary of Defense, ex-Director of the CIA. And he said it in a way that I call lying by omission. What he actually said was, in no case ever was remote viewing information held utilized as standalone information within the intelligence arena. Well, the fact of the matter is, they never take action on anything as standalone information. Everything has to have at least two sources in order to be validated.
Mm-hmm.
So he wasn't lying, except he wasn't telling the whole truth.
Right, as always, I understand how that works.
And so is remote viewing not being used at all by the military now? Is there other technology that's being used as a substitute?
Actually, I have to say it's not being used. Our program was shut down in November of 1995 for a number of different reasons. One is it's extremely difficult finding people who have world-class talent who are willing to subject themselves to that form of employment. Because I will tell you, frankly and up front, that my participation in that program for 20 years was definitely a deterrent to my advancement. I was not thought well of by anybody else in the Army at the time. So you sort of take your reputation in hand when you volunteer for these kinds of projects. People just are not open. Pardon?
I did work for, I worked on some cases with some three-letter agencies, and I know the police detectives and other private investigators used to say to me, do not get involved with these government investigators, and now I know why.
Exactly.
So I'm not going to go into that, but I know that you talked about having missing persons cases, and I've spent a lot of time on that, too. And I often, although I relied on my intuition and my inner senses on my cases, I didn't solely rely on that. I relied on factual information as well and in combination to really come to conclusions and resolve problems and cases.
Yeah.
So it's good to have a whole system approach when you're doing that kind of work.
We're starting to run out of time a bit, but something, one last question I'd really love you to address. As a therapist, in my work with people, what I do all the time is address not just their feelings, but their ability to actually change the way in which they perceive things and therefore their emotions. Now, I guess that from what you've told us, that's a little bit like stepping into a different reality. What would be your advice to people who are suffering and who are very unhappy about the life they have? How does one step into a different, better reality?
There is a test. I don't believe in giving advice unless it's a testable. And what I always say to people is, if you wake up in the morning in a deep, dark funk, I can guarantee if you wallow in it, the afternoon is going to be terrible. But if you force yourself to get out of bed and do something really, really fun or something that changes the whole energy of the situation, completely different from the problem you might be worried about, your afternoon will be much better than your morning. And that's how you can change your reality. You have to make take some kind of an active step towards improving or doing something that you like to do, and get your mind off the things that are making you sad or unhappy.
Fantastic. Okay. Well, thank you so much for being on a show. That's great advice, and we really enjoyed having you and appreciate everything you had to say. And
absolutely fascinating.
And
it's been fun.
We will. Okay. Thank you very much, and we will see you next time on Universal Solas. Bye for now.
Okay. Bye-bye.